From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the sixth day of November 2012. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson at L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana. Dave Dickey, your Director of Agricultural Programming, will be here with a look at today's agricultural news. We'll hear about the agricultural weather forecast from Don Day at Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming, and Elaine Cubb, commodity broker and author of Mastering the Grain Markets will be here in the first of what we'll call a series of programs on terminology related to agricultural commodities. And it all comes up during this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report, a production of Illinois Public Media from the University of Illinois.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. For over 96 years, generations of farmers have turned to Farm Credit for their financial needs. Whether a young farmer or a seasoned grower, Farm Credit offers products and service geared specifically to the agricultural community.
In Chicago on a Tuesday afternoon, futures finished in the soft red winter wheat pit at $8.76.5. They were up 10.5 cents. That's on a close and not a settlement price. July at $8.78.25, up 4.25. The hard red in Kansas City at $9.25, up 4.25 as well. December corn back in Chicago, $7.40.75, 5.25 cents higher. The March at $7.42.5, up 4.5. And May futures in the corn pit, $7.39, 3.5 higher. July contract $7.31, up 4.25. September at $6.58, 5.5 higher. And December of 2013, our new crop corn, $6.37, up 5.5. From the bean pit, November contract again today, up 12.5 cents, $15.16.75. And those are settlement prices. January at $15.15.5, up 12.25. And the March settled at $14.91, up 8.5. The May futures in the bean pit, $14.65.25. Quarter up 8.75 in July at $14.50, up 9.5 cents. August contract $14.18.25, up 10.5. And next year's November at $13.44.5 on a settlement price, up 10.25 from the soybean pit. Bean meal futures at $4.72.70, up $3.70. Bean oil at $48.79, 47 cents higher. Live cattle futures on the day. February contract $129.37.5, a settlement up 37.5 cents. April at $133.27.5, 20 cents higher. January feeder cattle at $146.72.5, down a nickel for the day. The March unchanged at $148.95, and lean hogs finished the February contract at $83.42.5. That's up 47.5 cents per 100 pounds. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It comes to you from Illinois Public Media. Here's what the outside markets look like. At this hour, crude oil futures, December contract, $88.24 a barrel, up $2.59. Gasoline and wholesale price, the RBOB at $2.69.3, that's up 7.3. And ethanol at $2.34.8 is a penny and 6 cents higher on the afternoon. Natural gas at $3.61.4, up 6 cents. Diesel fuel or heating oil at $3.04.8, up 6.5 cents. And gold futures for the day at $1,715 on a settlement price, up $31.80 a troy ounce. U.S. dollar at 80.61, that's down 0.13. The weather forecast for the Urbana-Champaign area this afternoon says that we'll see periods of rain with a high of 46 degrees on a southwest wind at 9 to 13 miles an hour. That'll gust all the way to 17. The chance of precipitation is set at 80% for the area this afternoon. Light rain, of course, will move into east-central Illinois and parts of southeastern Illinois this afternoon. The rain will begin in locations along I-57 between 1 and 30 this afternoon. Should have already started. And then from Paris through Newton to Flora by 2:30, so not too far away. Accumulations just of a tenth of an inch, maybe all the way up to a quarter, are anticipated. This evening, cloudy, gradually becoming mostly cloudy and drizzle. The drizzle should end before midnight. Cloudy and low after that, a 35-degree low. South winds at 6 to 8, and then tomorrow cloudy, and it'll become mostly sunny, a high of 49 degrees. And then tomorrow evening, mostly clear and 31. Thursday, sunny skies and 54. Mostly clear on Thursday evening and 36. And sunny skies on Friday and 59 degrees. Friday night, partly cloudy, a low 46. Saturday night, Saturday, sunny and a high of 64. And now Saturday night, mostly cloudy and a low of 49. More on the weather forecast when we get to the bottom of the half hour.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. For over 96 years, generations of farmers have turned to Farm Credit for their financial needs. Whether a young farmer or a seasoned grower, Farm Credit offers products and service geared specifically to the agricultural community.
It is the sixth day of November 2012. On the phone line with us to take a look at the futures markets is Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana, here on the Closing Market Report. Good afternoon to you, Wayne.
Well, good afternoon, Todd.
It is the day to go to cast your ballot. I went in early this morning. Have you made your trip to the place to cast that ballot yet?
You know, shortly after the end of this show, we're going to tool on up and cast our vote. We haven't missed voting in an election ever since we were able to register, and we're not going to start today.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. It's the civic duty and the right thing to do. So get out and vote.
I can complain that way.
Yes, you can. If you don't vote, you can't complain. That is absolutely true. Let's talk about the commodity markets. Was it a quiet day in trade today?
You know, there was some activity, but it was a quiet trade today. It was a fairly low-volume day. You know, we did go down yesterday. It was a hard day down, and we went down and sort of made some double bottoms and bounced off some support, and I did feel like there should be a little bit of a turnaround Tuesday day, and we got it and held it pretty good in the corn, but the beans didn't hold all their gains. So, you know, it's we hear that there's a lot of anticipation of knowing who's going to win the election and how to react. We saw one news clip that said that the outside markets were up on anticipation of an Obama victory, and that's what was pulling things up. But I think we've got a big report coming out on Friday, and I think that's going to really be the main market mover, what we get to when we get down to that time.
There was some concern yesterday that the head and shoulders bottom that is being formed in the soybeans might not be able to hold up under the pressure that came in from yesterday, but today's rally managed to take that out of play, at least for a while, I suppose.
I think that, you know, we did sort of feel that that is maybe a discernible bottom, at least for the meantime, unless we would see some real surprising news on Friday.
What kinds of things are you expecting from USDA Friday morning?
Well, of course, I mean, the estimates on the corn production are basically, you know, the average estimate's a 10.647 crop and a 122 type yield that way. So any variation of that, the range was 120 to 124.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it just two bushels either way. That's not a big deal on that one. So the soybean production, though, you know, they're looking at a estimate range of 36.5 to 39.1 as far as the estimates of what they're looking at that way, and the average guess being 38.16. The government was 37.8 last month, Todd. So, you know, we're looking for probably a half to three-quarters of a bushel increase as far as the bean production goes along.
That takes care of the United States, and we'll know more about that on Friday morning. Have you been watching South America very closely?
Yeah, you know, and they're thinking, as we look down there, especially in South America on the wheat, they're thinking that maybe it could be a 10 million metric ton crop down there, and the last USDA report had it at 11.5, and it was a 15 million metric ton crop last year. So because of the extra rain and stuff like that, that could be knocking us back that way too. Now, Solaris was estimating the Brazilian soybean crop at 79.02, and the USDA last report had it at 81. So that and the short, very short moisture in Iowa and Kansas for the wheat crop that's being planted out west is also something of great concern.
Well, many producers that listen to us will have taken a position in June or July based off of options and protecting crop insurance. By default, probably should have been lifted, but there will be a few that have not done that. Is your expectation that they should continue to speculate, or shall they take profits?
I would probably think profits are in order.
Anything else that we had to add for the day?
Like that. So just one little clip. Morgan Stanley put out that they're bullish the ags in the gold market for the rest of the year.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Todd.
Wayne Nelson is with L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana. He joins us here on the Closing Market Report on this Tuesday afternoon.
Leonard Seed Service supports agricultural programs as an additional service to its customers. Leonard Seed Service is an independent dealer providing DeKalb and Asgrow seed products to farmers throughout East Central Illinois via the Asgrow On Demand Bulk Soybean Handling System. Leonard Seed Service, 217-497-2270.
Well, this is the Closing Market Report. If you'd like to hear our programs again, you can do that anytime you'd like on our website. The address there is willag.org. On our mobile website at m.willag.org. And we've done a couple of tweaks to that site. You can actually get to the weekly archive under the Closing Market Report and see a page with all 5 days. And it's a rolling five. So if you want to go back and listen to somebody, that's possible. There's also a calendar there, though fiddling with that one just a bit, that tells you who is the guest and who are the panelists for Commodity Week. It's all right there at m.willag.org.
In agricultural news, the executive director of the Japan Meat Traders Association says the major East Asian markets will be importing less pork next year because of an anticipated contraction in total supply and weak demand. A recovery this year in Japan's total hog slaughter and national output has put a more competitively priced fresh chilled domestic cuts into retail distribution, and this trend is expected to continue into 2013. The Treasurer of Australia says that U.S. fiscal problems is the biggest threat to the global economy. Wayne Swan told an economic conference in Melbourne that he sees the fiscal cliff that the United States will face in January as the largest single threat to a global economic recovery. Swan says, quote, trillion-dollar deficits are not sustainable, and quantitative easing is not a long-term solution. Congress may return to Washington next week for a lame duck session during which members may take up issues that include mandated tax increases and spending cuts. It will take place automatically after the first of the year unless Congress strikes a deal to avoid them. The Israeli government today approved the chicken industry's request to raise egg prices due to the escalating cost of animal feed. The consumer price of eggs, one of a handful of price-regulated food products in Israel, will rise about 5%. Ukraine's grain harvest so far this year is down 16% from the same time last year because of drought. As of November 5th, Ukraine has harvested 42 million metric tons of grain, or 94% of the total area to be harvested, with an average yield of 3.03 tons of hectare. Over the same period last year, the average yield was 3.58 tons a hectare. Meanwhile, Kazakhstan's grain harvest has more than halved this year. The Agriculture Ministry today says that Kazakhstan has completed this year's grain harvest with 14.718 million metric tons of grain in bunker weight produced, compared with nearly 29.7 million tons in bunker weight in 2011. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming for Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week. This morning, I received an interesting email from the National Crop Insurance Services Company. They're a not-for-profit that represents private crop insurance and insurance agents in Washington, D.C. They do some lobbying, but they're also an international group. They had some interesting information about crop insurance I wanted to pass along to you, simply because some of you understand crop insurance and some of you listen to the programs and wonder oftentimes what it is. Crop insurance, here's the way it's supposed to work. The farmer signs up for crop insurance and pays a premium. For every dollar that the farmer puts in, the expectation is that over time, they'll receive a dollar out. Now, there'll be many years where the farmer will sign up for crop insurance and get nothing. And then years like this one, where they will sign up and get a really big check because of the drought. Let me give you an example. There's a group of farmers, a couple of brothers in deep southern Illinois, the Bunton Boys, that farm about 5,000 acres. Divide that in half, gives them 2,500 acres apiece. Now, the average farm size in the state of Illinois is about 800 acres, so they're each about three times as big as the normal farm size in the state of Illinois. We'll give you that for reference. This spring, the two of them wrote a $100,000 check for their crop insurance premium. Now, you and I, when we write checks for our car insurance or for our home insurance, may write it all at once, but it's more likely we'll write it as a quarterly or a monthly payment. The checks for crop insurance all do at once, $100,000. That $100,000 investment this year and all the previous years that they have written those crop insurance checks comes back to them sometimes in really tough years. For instance, this year, the Bunton boys normally would raise about 147 bushel to the acre corn, 45 bushel to the acre soybeans. This year, they raised 15 bushel to the acre corn and 15 bushel to the acre soybeans. So they'll get a check from the U.S. government for their crop insurance. It's an indemnity check, and they did pay a premium over time for it. I just wanted to pass that little note about crop insurance along to you.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. Stuart Peterson develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information at stuart-peterson.com.
Well, each Tuesday during the growing season, we bring you the weekly crop progress report with the statisticians from Iowa, Illinois, Nebraska, Minnesota, and Indiana, the five top corn-producing states in the nation, because it's of interest and importance to the marketplace. But that doesn't happen during the winter months, and I was thinking about what to do. Over the summertime, I read a really good book called Mastering the Grain Markets by Elaine Cubb. Elaine is one of the commodity week guests we have talked to over the last year, and I wondered whether she might be interested in speaking with us once a week during some of the winter months about her book and some of the terminology that you may or may not understand that we discuss here on our program, The Closing Market Report. Elaine agreed, so I called her this morning, and we started to talk about Mastering the Grain Markets, her book. I asked her first about her background.
Well, I grew up in South Dakota on a cattle farm and small grain farm, and I still rent land there, and I'm active with the livestock operation up there. And then I went to engineering school and business school, and then I ended up working through the hedge fund industry and then getting into the commodity markets because I really felt that that was a good, you know, match of my love for agriculture and my love for mathematics and statistics. So I did that for a while. I was a grain merchandiser for a while to get a really good sense of the cash grain side of the business. And now I am an independent futures broker.
Why'd you decide to write a book? It's a huge undertaking.
Well, I felt like I had something that I wanted to say. I write a column for DTN, and so I enjoy writing. I knew that. And I knew that when I was starting out as a grain merchandiser, or when I was starting in this industry at all, there just really wasn't any book like this to give you just a background of what people mean when they say certain terms. Or, you know, to tell you about basis trading without being really, really boring or turning it into a textbook. And I really enjoy a lot of the nonfiction, the popular science books that are coming out these days. So I really thought that this was a topic that could use that treatment that people would be happy to hear about or read about. So I thought I would give it a try because I did enjoy writing. And you're right, it was a huge undertaking. And it was hard to distill it down into just the topics that people really want to know about. So I was really glad when I got it done.
When you say treatment, what do you mean?
Well, there's a lot of stories in it. So it's, you know, specific examples of people who are in the industry. So farmers, there's one character who's a farmer who goes throughout the book and you get a sense for what his challenges are and what his worries are throughout a growing season. Or there are characters who are grain traders. So you get a sense of who the population is that is really out trading this grain in the countryside or growing this grain or using this grain, the end users. I tried to make it a little more personal, a little more interesting than just a dry textbook sort of approach.
Tell me about the farmer character.
Joe Smith is his name, and he is from Central Iowa, from a fictional town in Central Iowa. And I think that I tried to make him just representative of the farmers that I know, you know, what their concerns are. They are concerned about growing this crop. They have a great deal of suspense and worry throughout any given summer. In this particular summer in the book, it's dry, and so he's worried about the hot nights and the dry weather, and so I think it's really timely that it worked out this way when I was writing it. You know, and he's worried about paying his loans, and he's worried about making the right marketing decisions. So you really get a feel for all the things, all the decisions that farmers have to make, that it's not just watching a futures chart and figuring that out. There's a lot of other decisions that go into the marketing picture.
Yeah, but through the book, you weave these characters in and out, and you give them... Well, they have tasks. You don't give them tasks. I guess you do as the writer. You give them tasks that they must complete. And you sort of follow them and you follow the grain all at the same time.
Right, exactly. So if you were just going to write a book, and there certainly are books out there now for people who want to be investing in these markets, they can go find a book about technical analysis and how to read a chart and how to try and identify a trend and make money that way. But it's not that easy when you're actually doing it, when you're a character who has to be making these decisions that is your livelihood. So, yeah, to show that interaction between the characters that are actually trading these markets and the markets themselves and how they're moving and how the volatility really affects someone's bottom line, I thought that was a challenge for this book, yes.
And there are some really bright shopkeepers, some really shrewd shopkeepers that you develop along the way, too.
Yeah, I am so lucky, you know, to have had experience in this industry and met these characters. All these characters, I know there's one that you like, Todd, Rosie, and she is based on a real person that I know who is trading grain. She's a grain merchandiser in a little elevator, you know, and she knows these folks that have been doing this for decades and decades, and they know to their bones, you know, what the markets are like, how to trade these spreads, how to trade the basis. And so when you have new people coming in, it's easier for the old hands to really get the subtleties in the markets than someone who's just learning.
Yeah, and sometimes in your book they take them to town.
Yeah, and that happens. I mean, these are great experiences that everybody who's traded these markets know. Like, you can make these mistakes, and life goes on.
You know, I took the book with me on my iPad on a family vacation this summer, and it was really enjoyable to read. We were in Costa Rica, and I understand that you were on the beach when you wrote the book.
I wrote part of the book in El Salvador. I had gotten a little bit stuck. You know, you kind of think about, what does this book need to be? And it was starting to get a little textbooky, a little dry, and so I was a little bit stuck, and then I took my laptop with me on vacation to El Salvador and on the beach, and it really just started to go again. I understood the big global view of what people really need to understand about these markets.
How do people get hold of the book? I bought it on iTunes for my iPad. I think it is available as Kindle as well.
Yes.
Other ways? Where do you find
it? Well, everywhere that you should be able to find an ebook, you can certainly do it there. So through iTunes is one way. There's a site called Smashwords that has every format of ebook. That's an easy way to do it. But I know Barnes & Noble also offers it as an ebook, and of course Amazon does as a Kindle. And for the hard copy, the best way to get it is through Amazon. So Amazon.com, look for Mastering the Grain Markets, or just go directly to the book's website, which is www.masteringthegrainmarkets.com, and you can click right through Amazon through there.
Thanks so much.
Thank you, Todd.
Elaine Cubb, commodity futures broker and author of Mastering the Grain Markets.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Find us online at willag.org. In just 2 minutes, I'll be back. We'll take a look at the agricultural weather forecast.
It's National Nachos Day. In their simplest form, nachos are generally tortilla chips covered in melted cheese. The origin of nachos generally goes to a restaurant called the Victory Club just across the U.S. border from Eagle Pass, Texas. Wives of several U.S. soldiers were visiting on a shopping trip and stopped by the restaurant after it had closed for the day, and the chef on duty invented a new dish for them with what little he had in the kitchen, tortillas and cheese. On this day in agricultural history in 1923, hyperinflation was running rampant in Europe. A loaf of bread cost 140 billion German marks. In 1976, David Morin died. an American pathologist. His research on the treatment of goiter with iodine led to the iodizing of table salt. Iodized table salt was first sold in the U.S. on May 1st of 1924. In 1986, President Ronald Reagan signed into law the Immigration Reform and Control Act, granting legal residency to most illegal immigrants who had been in the country continuously since January of 1982. And in 1993, the world's largest peanut butter and jelly sandwich was created in Peanut, Pennsylvania. It was almost 40 feet long and used 150 pounds of peanut butter and 50 pounds of jelly. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit of Illinois, offering financial products and services specifically for the agriculture industry, including farm real estate and operating loans, crop insurance, and point-of-sale financing, as well as farm cash management solutions.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report on a Tuesday afternoon. Don Dev, Day Weather from Cheyenne, Wyoming, on the phone line to take up the weather forecast. Don, where in the world would you like to start today?
Well, let's start in South America.
Okay. Tell me about it.
And as we take a look down, it looks pretty moist. Both Argentina and Brazil have a fairly active weather pattern coming on up. So odds are looking pretty good that rains will cover most of the growing areas over the next 10 days. I think areas in Argentina, which could use a little bit of moisture, got a good chance of seeing it.
And this would not be odd. This would be the beginning of their wet season, if I...
Well, yeah, without a doubt. And correspondingly, temperatures and conditions are going to be really close to normal, as you'd expect in a wet pattern, either near normal, slightly below normal temperature-wise. But right now, they're... precipitation chances look to be lining up with what you'd expect with the calendar.
It's always difficult at the beginning of the growing season to see what the crop might be like. What would you suggest? Is this a fairly normal beginning to their growing season, or has it been a bit odd?
Well, I would say pretty close to normal. When you look at the soil moisture profile, while we've got a little bit of a dry start in some areas of Argentina, as you look at the growing areas of Brazil, things are about where they should be. And since there's really no striking pattern, let's say we don't have a strong El Nino, we don't have a La Nina going on, you would expect that their growing season weather-wise should trend to what you'd expect in a normal year.
Okay, now come to North America. Tell me about the Dakotas. They've been really dry, and the numbers for wheat emergence have been really awful there. And then stay with wheat in the Great Plains state, please, after that.
Well, there is good news, at least for North Dakota. Of course, they may not think it's good news when it comes to the wheat, but they've got a winter storm that's brewing that's going to be really spinning up and taking shape later this weekend. And it's going to be quite a storm system. The plains of eastern Montana into western North Dakota will see significant amounts of snow and wind, but it will be good moisture for the wheat areas there. South Dakota won't fare as well, although I do see the central and northern parts of Minnesota ending up in good precipitation. There'll be some lighter precipitation in some of the wheat country of Nebraska, Colorado, and Kansas, but they would certainly like to see more, but they'll get a little bit.
Anything else we ought to discuss before I let you go for the afternoon?
Well, do expect the colder weather that's developing out west to move into the Corn Belt Midwest. There'll be a good swath of rain and thunderstorm activity Sunday into Monday. Behind that front, pretty chilly temperatures coming for next week.
Well, that's why I didn't ask you about it all. Thanks so much, Don.
Thank you.
Don Day is with Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report on a Tuesday afternoon. And that wraps it up. I'm Todd Gleason.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.